Today's program is brought to you by the International Culinary Center, offering courses that range from classic French techniques in culinary, pastry, and bread baking to Italian studies to management, from culinary technology to food writing, from cake making to wine tasting. For more information, visit culinarycenter.com.
I'm Laura Stanley, host of Inside School Food. You are listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Welcome to the main course on Heritage Radio Network. I'm your host, Alexis McLaughlin, here with Philip Gilmore every Sunday.
Good morning.
We're really excited. We have in studio Stephen Torres, founder and creator of Roots of American Food, as well as Ashley Sears, photographer and co-collaborator on the project. So welcome, guys.
Thank you very much for having us.
Thanks.
Every time I hear that intro song, I don't know what it is.
It's pretty awesome.
I think it's like being a little hungover and being early on a Sunday, but it's just like it puts me in a better space.
Well, it kind of makes you want to dance a little bit. Just yeah. Like kind of move.
That's two of my best friends, Chufu and Breedlove, and they're kind of part of the whole Lady Gaga scene, and they've been doing this party in the Lower East Side or the East Village called Magic Mondays. And so it was like this big, crazy party. So it's kind of, that's kind of the theme song of the night. So, yeah. So your intuition is correct.
It's a weird, like, kind of slow, kind of meandering cartoon comic feel. Mm-hmm. But it's just something that, like, immediately I get a little, like, excited. And I know it's going to be fun and not too serious.
Yeah. It's a catchy tune.
It is.
Well, and this, too, with the vermouth that we bought today, thought that we would have a little bit... little cocktail to start off our afternoon.
Yeah, well, I guess that also helps that we've already started drinking.
Yeah, so this is balsam vermouth. It's from my good buddy Adam Seeger and Rod from Rare Tea Cellar, also Boyd and Blair Vodka. And yeah, just wanted you guys to check it out.
I mean, if you're trying to compete for like favorite guests of the season, cheap tricks,
right.
Yeah. It's really nice. It's really tasty.
It says on the bottle that it's vodka with fruit and spices. What are the fruits in it?
Well, that's, I mean, if they told me, they'd probably have to kill me, so.
Proprietary blend.
Yeah.
Oh my God, jinx.
Jinx. Double jinx.
Man, we haven't even been doing it that phrasing, hosting this radio show together that long.
Yeah.
We're on point today.
We're already on the same wavelength.
It's like you're... always know how to finish my
sentences.
No, thank you so much for bringing this in. This is really refreshing. Is it a vermouth? It's an Amaro. Well, it's like an aperitif.
Well, when you add the wine, it becomes vermouth.
Really?
Because
we're drinking it. It's white wine.
It's a Riesling with blend. You can mix it with champagne. They have a bunch of different cocktail recipes. It's pretty versatile.
Yeah.
They're also like up for an award for Tales of the Cocktail this year as well. So
where's it made again?
It's made in Pennsylvania.
Nice.
And they're just really, really great, amazing guys. I wanted to support them as much as possible.
Nice.
I didn't realize I had the pleasure of having dinner at Maison Premier with Christophe, who's, you know, one of the... you know, founders and really like the driving force behind the beverage program. But they carry, you know, these really unique spirits and what is it, absinthe and other, you know, kind of like aperitif, you know, medicinal tasting things. And he was explaining that this isn't—it's never a money-making venture for a distillery, but it always ends up being like, you know, the passion of the project. Like
right.
you'll put out your whiskey or your vodka or your gin, your, you know, the thing that'll sell, and then you can have a passion project where you're working with wormwood and
right. things that make people see things and stuff.
Yeah. But it's, you know, when you get to taste something that's someone's passion, that's really cool.
You can taste the love.
Yeah, absolutely. You've got a lot of friends that do really interesting things.
I do. I'm very, very lucky. I like to say that I'm actually not good at anything. I just am able to see talent, and I love to promote people who are doing amazing things. So that's how kind of, you know, the conference was born. How the website was born originally, Imbibe and Inspire, you know.
Yeah, because that came because the conference is American
Roots of American Food. Correct.
But it kind of grew from a website and like kind of this like, was it a blog presence that you have?
You know, the website was like total shit. Like it was like built out so horribly.
GeoCities,
basically. And it just, I mean, I look back at it now and it did not look good at all.
Cascading style, she'd be damned.
We used to too. Like I remember when I wanted there to be like a musical aspect. So we would like, as soon as the screen would come up, there'd be like blasting music, and it was usually like just so uncomfortable people. But I mean, I will say the people that I had on the site, the access I was able to be granted to some of the amazing chefs, bartenders, etc. in this country, and the content, the questions I asked, because I was in the industry, and I, you know, I think I knew the questions that I would want to know what these people were doing. You know, that was something special, but visually it was not awesome.
Mm-hmm. That's okay. At least you realize, like, you know, the horrendous affront to the user experience right. afterwards. Some people never learn that lesson.
Definitely.
Are these connections you made through being in the food industry? We were talking about before the show went on, like just giving our battle scars.
Yeah. So I mean,
years spent.
Yeah. So I was lucky enough. The last like 5 or 6 years, I worked at a restaurant in Chicago called Alinea. And I worked at 11 Madison Park. So, you know, from that, you know, I was able to get interviews with
from
like,
modest beginnings.
Those are two of the top 2,000 restaurants in the United States. Top four. Sorry, that's right. I'm sorry.
So I was able to, you know, get interviews with Will Goddara, who's the owner of 11 Madison Park, and then Grant Achatz, and then, you know, people, you know, wanting to be a part of that as well. I was able to interview pretty much everyone else in between, you know, Jim Meehan, like a bunch of amazing people, Jordan Salcido, who's the wine director for Mama Fuku now, and just kind of pick their brain and kind of talk to them about, you know, what they thought was happening in this industry and like what inspired them. And I don't know, it just came from a really, like we were saying, like a place of love that, you know, and it was really, really cool.
So when did that idea kind of shift into this conference, into, you know, turn into, you know, Roots of American Food?
It's really funny.
Or if you want to explain a little bit about what, you know, Roots is.
Yeah, just... I mean, it was all, I mean, like everything, it's that pretty much the last couple of years has been pretty organic. Like, I never was like, I'm going to start a website, I'm going to do this, I'm going to start a conference, I'm going to do this. Like, I remember I was in Chicago, and I was at the hotel where the event has been the last 2 years, and my girlfriend at the time was doing like a shoot there, and I was with the marketing manager, and she's like, hey, like, you know, what do you do? And I was like, oh, I run this website, etc. And she was like, well, we would love to do an event with you or something like that. And I thought she was like kind of full of shit, because, you know, a lot of people say stuff and it never materializes. But and then, you know, we followed through, and then funny enough, like maybe like 9 months later, the first event, the first Roots of American Food, like happened. And, you know, we had, I mean, like Paul Liebrandt, Alex Stupak, Eric Anderson, John Shield, like just an amazing lineup. Like, I still don't really know how I did it. And, you know, I'm still like paying off credit cards that like maxed it out, just because it really was like my first rodeo. Yeah. You know, I had no idea what I was doing. But it really kind of lit the fire in me to start it.
What was the theme of the first one? Because each of them have kind of this broader.
The first one didn't even have a theme. We were just like, let's go for it. You know, like, let's just do this. And it was really just kind of like my idea, and like I pretty much like enlisted like my friends, you know. It's like, hey, you know, do you want to come to Chicago for a couple of days, talk, you know, maybe cook. I wouldn't say there wasn't really a theme to that one. But the second year, you know, we honored Jeremiah Tower, who is this amazing chef who kind of I would say he's the founder of California cuisine, mm-hmm. along with Alice Waters. We honored him last year, and that was super amazing. So I think I can talk about this, but 0.0, Anthony Bourdain's production company, shot part of the documentary that they're doing on him at the conference. So that, I think, should be coming out fairly soon, but that gave us a lot of momentum. And I wouldn't say that year had a theme, but it was more just, let's focus on this guy who really, you know, brought up American cuisine to kind of the forefront.
Well, you know, from going back and reading about him and watching the videos, because there's some videos on YouTube and stuff from the conference, and they're really well put together. I guess I felt a theme, whether it was intentionally there or not. The first one was just like really, you know, like showcase of chefs in kind of like this fun, you know, camaraderie of, you know, get everyone together. Let's celebrate with our own and within the industry and do something that's, you know, private for us, by us.
Right.
The second one had, you know, this kind of feeling to me, because there was a lot of younger chefs, there was a lot of CDCs and SUs, where it felt that they were, you know, kind of celebrating, like, you know, coming up, like you're...
Oh, yeah, that was the future of American food.
Yeah.
So that was like a separate dinner that we did to promote, you know, the main event.
Okay, so they're separate...
They're separate. This year, they're together.
Okay.
So this year, you know, it's the first time we're doing it in New York City. And, you know, we're really, really excited about that. We're doing it on Labor Day, which I think is, you know, very American. and plus, too, I mean, I think it just helps, too, because most chefs' restaurants are closed that day. So very fortunate in that sense. And this year's theme is the American dream. Mm-hmm. And actually, for the first time, I think I'm actually qualified to put on this event. you know, just from the last 2 years of experience, and then because of another project I'm working on, the recipe website Go Whisk, mm-hmm. I have been on legitimately been on the road the last 8 months. I've been in about 30 cities, shooting recipes with chefs, meeting with photographers, different brands, but we're doing it very like bootstrap, you know. So I've taken every megabus route in America, and I've slept on every friend's couch that I know, and most of those friends happen to be chefs. So I have gone to, you know, like crawfish shacks in Louisiana and fun places in Charleston and Seattle, Portland, you know, Salt Lake City. I've legitimately been in all these places and just seen like every sort of cuisine across America. And I think that's what really kind of pushed me to kind of, you know, really, really want to talk about, you know, the American dream and what's happening with, you know, food in that sense.
Yeah. I mean, it doesn't sound all awful.
No, I think I have the 20 pounds to prove it on me. So, no, I definitely ate better than most people in America as well.
Was there some cuisine that you didn't see coming? Like something you wouldn't expect, like, you know, you're in Idaho or something, or something you didn't, something that you discovered that you didn't know existed or you thought wasn't going to be as good as it was?
You know, it's not a cuisine, but Ashley can speak on this, but in Austin, you know, it's a big food truck culture, but which, I mean, it baffles me what they can do out of those food trucks. But there's this one particular called Via 313, and they do Detroit style pizza. Mm-hmm. And it was the first time I had ever had it.
I was going to say, Detroit style pizza.
I'm from Detroit, and I didn't even know that there was like a Detroit style pizza until we chatted and I put it into perspective.
It's like a grandma slice, sort of like Sicilian, but better.
Wait. What's a grandma
like
slice?
Square pizza, kind of deep dish, but like...
They put the sauce on top?
No. So that's the difference.
They put some of the sauce on top.
Oh, at Buddy's, I guess they probably do. But
I guess that's New York grandma's. They put the sauce put on top of the cheese.
Yeah, they put a little bit of sauce on top.
But the crust is different there.
The crust is like caramelized.
And caramelized on the outside.
It's amazing. So one of the other people we're working with is Shinola. So I had the chance to go to Detroit, and I was like, I need to try Detroit style pizza in Detroit. And it's like my favorite obsession right now.
I sent him a list of all the spots that I would go as a high school kid, like roaming around in my friends' cars.
Before you knew it was
pizza.
A thing. Before yeah. you knew it was hashtag Detroit style.
Exactly.
Which can now be applied to everything else.
Everything.
Why not?
All of it. It's delicious.
Well keeping 100% on point of American food, of American food and pizza, did you know that Pizza Hut is coming out with a thing to drum up business where the entire crust
wrapped in bacon?
It's hot dog bites. They have little pieces of hot dog, so it's like this beautiful sunflower of hot dog and pizza.
See, that's too much.
I think that's culinarily speaking, jumping the shark. the hot dog bites on the pizza. That's jumping the shark. I think that's the beginning of the end for Pizza Hut.
Yeah, 100%.
I think it's unfortunately been 3 shows since I've talked about this, but you know, hot dogs. My spirit animal. Yeah. Forced meat. Yeah. The ultimate way to support the nose to tail movement.
Yeah.
I'm glad we got to squeeze in hot dogs for a moment.
I mean I like, you know, like the taco shell made out of Doritos. Yes. But
that's not American food, I don't know what it is. I will say though, speaking about Pizza Hut, one of my like earliest childhood memories was being in elementary school, having the Book It. Do you remember Book It? Where if you read a certain amount of, maybe it was a Midwest thing, but if you read a certain amount of books, you could get
a slice of pizza?
No, you could get like a personal like pepperoni pizza at a Pizza Hut. But me and my girlfriend, we were in New Orleans for my birthday, and I was like, I really want to go to like a Pizza Hut and get like pizza. And we were looking.
Have you ever tried the pasta?
I have not. But we were looking for a Pizza Hut, and they're all just these like fast casual like hole in the wall spots anymore. There's no more like Pizza Hut restaurants. So say what you will about it, but that kind of made me sad.
Yeah. There's also no Little Caesars here.
There's Little Caesars here.
Little Caesars came back. So man, Florida, I think, you know, in the boondocks kept Little Caesars alive. I was in Tallahassee for like the last 8 years, and we did have a Pizza Hut. I think I went into once. I was probably too drunk, which is why I don't have an actual memory of it. But Little Caesars was this like anomaly, this unicorn that you could find like going out to the coast in these podunk towns, and there'd be like a Little Caesars, and finally one opened up again, and like the branch started coming back.
$5 not and ready's.
I know, not that we.
Well, their breadsticks are like Krispy Kreme donuts. You can like crumble them up and make a ball and just like eat it. I've done it once or twice.
No shame.
I don't know if this is somehow like a subconscious self fulfilling prophecy, but Do you guys know the band Das Racist? Two Indian guys. It's friends of mine, but they have one of their biggest songs is actually called Combination Pizza Hut and Taco Bell.
I have that song posted on my Facebook wall.
I'm at the Pizza Hut. I'm at the Taco Bell. I'm at the combination pizza hut and Taco Bell. Actually, he's just doing a solo tour, but I have to tell you because I want to promote my friend. But the name of his tour is called Eat, Pray, Thug.
Yes.
That's brilliant.
He's an absolute genius.
Jared Landon Porter, I'm going to have to send this episode to him. He fucking loved that song for whatever reason.
I'm at the Combination Pizza Hut and Taco Bell.
It was like 2008 or 2009?
Yeah, 2009, yeah. All right. I literally was listening to it yesterday.
Maybe we can get that for our intro music
Oh my gosh, are you kidding me? I would love it. He would 100% say yes to that.
Yeah. All right, let's take a quick break and then come back for some more fun in the studio.
The press.
for listening to Cool Boy by Sleepies. This is The Main Course on HeritageRadioNetwork.org.
The International Culinary Center is a proud sponsor of the HeritageRadioNetwork.org. The ICC, with locations in New York and California, provide cutting-edge education to future chefs, restaurateurs, and wine professionals. We're proud to claim Dan Barber, Bobby Flay, and David Chang among our honored alumni. This is Dorothy Cann Hamilton from Chef Story. Check out our ICC website at internationalculinarycenter.com.
Welcome back to The Main Course. That's going to have to be our new theme music.
DOS racist anyway.
Welcome back to The Main Course. Steven Torres in studio, Ashley Sears, we haven't really heard from yet, talking about roots of American food.
For the listeners, she's saying everything with her eyes. She speaks with her...
Smizing.
Yes.
Really. Smizing?
Smizing?
Is that a smiling like with your eyes?
Yeah, it's...
Liz is in the engineering booth. She's shaking her head.
That's not a thing. It is a thing.
We've got the verdict. Cool. Did we get off? Did we lose track of where we were? Combination Pizza Hut and Taco Bell.
It's very distracting, you know? Fast food.
That'll be maybe for Roots... hashtag Roots 4 will be the fast food venture. I want to talk a little bit more about Roots 3, if nothing more than my own edification, because I hope to, you know, with Heritage be a part and kind of help support this.
Thank you guys. I mean, we're so excited to have you on board.
Oh, also, we didn't really, you know, touch on the idea. I think like we're talking about because we all come from an industry standpoint, but this is it's an industry event. Like the people who are going are, you know, people who are participating are chefs, but they're also the ones that are invited. You know,
yeah, you know the. Again, you know, like I said, I was, you know, 30 different cities in the past 8 months and hanging out with chefs every single day, 24/7. And the number one thing every single one of them said to me was, do you know any good cooks? Do you know any good sommeliers? Do you know any good bartenders across the country? Like, it's like everyone always asked me that. And
to hire
just because
welcome to my fucking life.
Exactly.
Like every day.
Exactly. And
do you know I'll ask you after the show.
And I think that, you know, I've been in this industry for a long time. My contribution to this industry is this conference. And, you know, I think the biggest part of, you know, trying to get more people to hire, get more like qualified cooks is education. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think that hopefully, you know, the people who come to my conference, the cooks, the chefs, you know, the bartenders, the sommeliers, you know, they can take a little something and, you know, feel that they, you know, learned something in that day, had fun, had good food, and, you know, danced. You know, dancing makes everything better. But I think that, you know, that's the very basis of what I'm trying to do, is to just, you know, educate someone, or whether it be like very, very like specific knowledge, or whether it be like a chef talking about his experience from culinary school or growing up to where he is now. Yeah. You know, because I think it's so important to, you know, learn what people who kind of built this industry before you did to get where they are.
You kind of hit on a point that I find interesting. I was talking to my business partner about this, and one of my mantras for like people I hire is, you know, Caesar's only as good as his weakest man. And the people that are asking, you
are
know,
you
do you know
back good, to Caesar's little Caesar?
No, I'm talking about Big Caesar.
Oh,
but like the chefs that are asking you, do you know sommelier? Do you know sous chef? Do you know garmanger? They can find a sommelier, but they don't want just any sommelier.
Right.
And that's what I think that people that succeed in this business or more than succeed is because of their ability to hire the right person, not just anybody. And you've seen it as we all have. The restaurants that open and close within a year, those are people that don't know what the fuck they're doing, and they just take people at face value and be like, oh, you're great for the job. No, I want the exact right person for the right job, which is hard to find.
Right. I mean, especially in a city like New York, San Francisco, LA, where the talent pool, I mean, you would think is so huge, but there's so many amazing restaurants opening, and it's like, boom, boom, you know, people stay there for a year, 6 months, and then it's like, you know, what, I don't know, what good is that? You know?
And then the sad truth, though, is also, too, you know, in the post-Food Network, whatever society, everybody that works in this industry thinks that they're the next superstar too.
Right.
You know, so there's,
you know,
there's,
which I've kind of learned that there is a little bit of room for, like you do need the ego in a way to be that competitive and to push yourself and put up with as much like shit as
well. You have to be crazy.
To. Yeah.
You have to be nuts. I mean, that's just,
Phil saying delirious after opening two restaurants in the last 2 months.
You know where I am right now?
On the edge of,
I'm at
like,
the Visa. I'm at the Taco. In my mind.
In my mind.
So paradise.
Let me ask you a question. If you had to eat at one restaurant in the United States, that you've never worked at, which one would it be? Because obviously, you know.
Oh, man, that's tough.
You're going to make some enemies.
Can I pick two?
Yeah, sure.
Okay.
Alinean Madison. No,
no, no. One would be my buddy Dan Hines at McCready's in Charleston. Sean Brock trusts him to run that kitchen. So it's basically like, you know, his restaurant. And the type of food he's putting out for doing like 200-300 covers, I mean, he's putting out like beautiful, insane tasting menu food for like 200-300 people, like,
wow,
on weekends. Like, it's just insane. It's like flavorful and good, and he's just like an awesome dude.
Mm-hmm.
And then my second would be like this totally a la carte place, this place called Rustic Canyon in LA. The chef Jeremy Fox, who probably made a dish that is probably the best thing I've ever put in my mouth.
What was it?
He was at this restaurant called Ubuntu in Napa, and it was all a vegetarian restaurant. It was connected to a yoga studio, like revolutionary. Like, you know how everyone now is like crazy about vegetables? Like, he did that shit like 10 years ago.
Yeah.
And it's a peas and white chocolate dish with pea consomme. It is mind-blowing. It is the most insane dish I've ever had in my life.
Wow.
But he's doing really, really amazing
food. It's a pea consomme?
Pea consomme, fresh like peas, and then like white chocolate. And there's a couple other things.
Is the consomme like a liquid?
Yeah.
And then is the white chocolate in chunks or shaving?
Yep, chunks, yeah.
Wow.
And it was just insane. But he's also like just an amazing, he's such an amazing guy and just so humble, so down to earth. And, you know, he just wants to make good food, you know? So those would be probably my two.
That's interesting. You said it's your best bite that you've ever had, because I'm kind of obsessed with vegan raw cuisine, and it's like as good as a, you know, freaking Miyazaki or Kobe beefsteak is. It's, you put some salt on it and you go,
boring.
And then you let it rest for 15 seconds or 15 minutes, and then you slice it and you're like, oh my god, it's so good. Okay, well, anybody. But to take like vegetables and make it amazing is such a task, and when it's done properly, it's my favorite. It's so amazing. Yeah.
It's definitely one of my, I mean, I personally, like for steak and stuff, like I just love cooking it at home.
Yeah.
You know, just like really, really simple. And
plus, for the price, you get five times as much.
Right. And you can spend more money on wine.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Wine is key. So, Ashley, I want to know, like, what is your contribution and connection with Roots? And are you working at all with the Go Wisps? Because we haven't really talked about that.
Yeah, so Stephen and I I got really excited when he started telling me about the conference, like, a year and a half ago for last year's. And so I've just been kind of trying to help in any way that I can to be a part of it, because I think it's really amazing, sort of... bringing all of these forward-thinking professionals in the culinary industry and seeing what they have to say. With Go Whisk, I've had the opportunity to shoot some stuff here in New York and some in Philly as well. And Go Whisk is really interesting to me because essentially, I don't know if we sort of went over this before, but it's a recipe-based website that's all recipes from chefs. So it's just been a unique experience. Like, as a photographer, I worked in the culinary industry as well, and getting to, you know, sit and shoot with chefs making dishes that they would want to cook at home is sort of the focus, I'd say, right? I mean, that's...
Yeah, my business partner, Josh Burns, he's the founder. He kind of brought me on, and we, you know, the whole goal is to get chefs from around the country who have cookbooks, but the one more focused on the ones who don't, and highlight these guys on doing stuff like, so for example, last week we shot Bryce Schumann from Bettany here in New York doing a burger, and he was so proud of that burger, and he's just like, this is the best burger ever. And hopefully everyone's gonna order it, like, we're so excited.
What was special about it?
You know, I'm not sure. I was not there, but he told me all about it, and the photographer told me all about it.
Was there any seasoning or things that he adds?
The thing that makes a burger special is always, like, the ratio and the simplicity of it, yeah. I think.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know what sort of condiments I've yet to see the photos, but I'm really excited, and I believe him. He's the best guy. But we want to kind of bring these different chefs into the home kitchen,
yeah,
and let the kind of general public see what they do with, like, not fancy food, something that they can replicate at home for the home cook.
What can you be passionate about? I was just talking about this last night with Josh Safer, who's the banquet chef over at Del Posto, and we were talking about the importance of, like, it was a deep conversation, but just, like, the fact that you go home, you cook for your family, and you're not, you know, garnishing everything with, like, you know, dandelion, like, finely chopped dandelion stems. Like, it's like, you know, making accessible things, because part of it is putting your love and passion into it, but another part is, like, allowing room to, you know, spend time with the people that you're cooking for, because that's the more important thing, is, like, how food is different inside a restaurant versus, like, the food we want to take home with us.
Well, that's what we want to do too. Like, you know, we want to be the sort of the aggregate to create experiences, you know, and we're also, you know, because of I've traveled so much, we're also putting together a kind of city guide of everywhere I've been and everywhere I've eaten. And again, it's just to help to kind of contribute to, you know, getting someone from Omaha, Nebraska, or from where I grew up, like East Chicago, who, you know, doesn't live near a major city and can go online, say, hey, like, I'm going to Charleston, South Carolina. Like, where can I eat that, you know, I trust the source and have amazing food? And that's what we're trying to accomplish.
So the cookbook, the home cooks that buy the book won't need, like, an immersion circulator, an anti-griddle.
that's the advanced level. Yeah. That's, like, the behind-the-scenes one. They still need that.
Did you ever play with the anti-griddle or the Alinea?
I never played with it myself.
Oh, is it cold?
No, it's like the coldest. Like, you can pour yeah, oil on it. And yeah. You know, anything. You can pour anything you want and it freezes it. It's like -2 billion degrees.
That's a
terrifying.
Lot of,
that's
and,
a
but
lot
it like a, and but it looks like it, but it looks like a griddle. Yeah, it's an anti griddle.
Okay.
I get it.
Like, anti.
No, because griddles are normally hot.
No. Yeah. So that was implied by the name. Yeah. oh God, I get made fun of so much at work.
You're so awesome.
Because I'm awesome. Yeah. Also, I love the people at Namiku.
At what?
At Namiku. They do, like, a home immersion circulator, like a sous vide machine.
Yeah.
If those are technical terms. But I mean, we cook with it all the time at the office because we do these chef tastings in our warehouse, in our test kitchen. And, you know, we've got a limited kitchen, so we just, like, sous vide everything, and it's fucking super simple. It's, like, so easy, and everything is just, like, perfect and consistent. When you're trying to taste, like, side-by-side different pork chops together, it's nice to just, like, know, like, these were all in the same water bath for the same amount of time.
For large format tasting menus, yeah, it definitely seems like it's changed the game.
Yeah, and sear it off. But everyone makes fun of me. Whatever. I'm gonna leave Heritage and just like go for the Namiku Street team. You know, we do like that is the biggest, you know, trouble in my day is that we do not have a Searsall in the warehouse.
Aww.
And I mean, you know, it's probably could be
that's
so
the
simple.
Biggest problem in your day. Then you're very lucky.
It would be. We should talk to Dave Arnold and see if we can't get one. Because I know. I mean, I know people. You know, that are in the office have Searsalls and.
Right.
Dave has his show on Tuesdays.
Share the love.
Yeah.
I think he carries a portable one in his backpack.
I'm pretty sure he does. He bikes with it.
So let me ask you guys what. You know, what other events do you think, you know, in New York City, you know, are either similar or not that are doing really cool stuff?
Comic-Con.
Actually, I meant to bring this up, but June 28th, that's a Sunday, Lupa, which is one of the cornerstone restaurants in the Batali Bastianich group, they were the first restaurant that Heritage Foods USA ever partnered with. You know, Mark Ladner was a chef at the time. Patrick Martins, who is, you know, the father of this show.
Dada!
he asked Mark, he's like, you know, I have all these pigs, like, how am I going to sell them? He asked Mark to come out on a farm tour. Mark did. They got, Lupa was on board as, like, our first customer. Our first client, awesome. They still buy from us. So 15 years later, they're hosting a lunch. And we're going to fly out Frank Reese, who is the godfather of American poultry breeding. He is just like a repository of information. The most rad dude in the world. Very knowledgeable. Craig Good. Him and his wife, Amy Good, are in Oldsburg, Kansas. Like, just, you know, his father taught at Kansas State University, like, just, you know, like, doctorates of animal science. And, Ben and Grace Mackin, who are lamb farmers in Vermont, and we're going to bring in all of these different farmers, and Lupa is hosting a tasting of, like, the different breeds that they raise side by side. But this is not something that has been done before. Yeah. We evaluate wine this way, we evaluate cheese this way. But I think, like, you know, obviously, I'm a little excited.
Side note, if you don't know this, these people, I just Googled them because I'm buying their chickens, but Snowdance Farms.
Oh, yeah, yeah, Mark Jaffe.
How cool are they?
Him and his wife,
they're so cool. I read this article that was, like, it was, like, kind of, like, this preface of, like, you know, don't read this unless you want to leave New York City forever. And it's, like, it's like this beautiful interracial couple that just decided to leave New York. And then they bought a house in the country with the idea of, like, you know, taking the kids for the summer. They liked the house so much they just got the fuck out of New York. And then they live there now and they raise, not only chickens, right? They also raise, I think, pigs and goats, maybe?
They've got... We only get chickens through them.
Well, I just saw pictures of pigs.
But they've got a nice, like, diverse farm going. They're a super nice couple.
The chickens are great. And it's a La Belle Rouge?
Yeah, La Belle Rouge. I mean,
I always say La Bella because it sounds better.
Yeah.
Sorry.
That's really
La
similar.
La Belle Rouge.
Do you guys know the Raven and Boar couple?
I'm
Ruby and Sather, they're up in Hudson.
Yeah, I know.
They do
know them,
heritage breed pigs, and they're really similar story. They were like, she's a graphic designer, he's a custom furniture maker. They lived in the city. They had a baby. She was pregnant with a second one. They found this old farmhouse in Hudson and ended up deciding like to get some animals for the kids, and now are one of like the best pig purveyors in the area.
So you're saying that they did not want to raise their children in bus fumes and rat dander?
No, they figured they'd just play in, like, you know, pig shit.
No, which is, no, which is
but
better.
But they're amazing.
Which is better. No, that's better than bus fumes and rat dander.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
It's incredible. Like, and they're really similar, like, just absolutely amazing people doing really beautiful things.
It takes
food.
A lot of dedication to foster these breeds, because it's not just about, it's not just about providing them with a good home. Like, no, husbandry is important, and that's
totally
a science, and it's about diet and selection, and there's so much science behind it, which is the thing that I love about it most. Like, I'm a city kid. I don't know anything about farming. This is not why I got into it, but it is super interesting, and I love every conversation I have with our farmers, because they're just the most intelligent people I know. And I don't know, I hope with the Lupa event on the 28th that people will get to come out and get to meet these people and just really make the connection, because to have the chef and the farmer come together and just be like, yo, we're holding hands, we're in this
for
together.
Sure.
And I think they'll say yo.
I think they will say yo. Craig Goods can be like, yo.
Yo, Frank Reese, what's up with your chickens, son?
Yeah, last year we had some farmers, Mike and Tina Werp, who supply a lot of farmers in Chicago. They're based in Michigan.
Oh, were they just in the... I just read an article or something.
Maybe.
I know the name, too, for some reason.
So it's Werp Farms, but they are just like... I mean, they're brilliant, but they're also just the salt of the earth people, mm-hmm. which I feel like a lot of farmers are. They're just you just want to hug them and thank them profusely and just be like, you're amazing.
Because
I think farming in California and the South is a little different, but up North, it's it's tough. And, they're talking about the winters and, the things that happen. And I don't know, they were just really, really great people.
Yeah, it's amazing. I mean, our farmers... We're lucky. We go out and visit them every year, and they put us up, and they put up with us, and they put up with our crazy New York shit that we're bringing out to Kansas, and are only ever warm and welcoming and gracious. It's I feel very fortunate all the time for the great people I get to work with.
Yeah, well, that's what I think makes this industry so amazing. And what's cool about the conference is bringing all those different kinds of people together, too. It's from the farmers to the chefs to the editors or the writers, putting them all in one space. And just everybody loves this industry and food so much and that culture.
I forgot we were going to try and get some farmers out for this next Roots 2.
When and where is it?
What are the details?
So it's September 7th, Labor Day. Basically, what we're doing is during the day, conference, talks, we're going to have lunch prepared by a couple of different chefs, and then we're going to break for about 20 minutes, do a nice, fun champagne hour on the roof, weather permitted. And then Min Kong from Andrew Carmelini's restaurant, Little Park, has been awesome enough to gather five female chef cuisines from around the city to cook a Yankee Meat and Three, which is a restaurant style very popular in the South. And Angela Pinkerton, who was formerly at 11 Madison Park, is going to be curating about 100 pies done by 10 to 15 pastry chefs around New York City.
It's amazing.
I'm hungry.
Yeah, it's going to be really, really fun. And then, of course... drinking, DJ, dancing, brass band.
If people want to find out a little bit more information, a little bit of background, or find the videos on the last one, is there something that they can search?
I mean, YouTube. Just type in Roots of American Food, and we have our YouTube channel from stuff from last year, the videos, etc.
Awesome. I want this to go on for another hour and a half. Maybe we can go out in the back and record a private session and just put it on as the extended interview. But I think we got to go for today. Our time is up.
Well, thank you so much.
Thank you guys so much. I really, really appreciate it. Hope you liked the booze, the hooch.
Very much appreciated the hooch. With that, happy Sunday.
What's the name of the company again? Plug it for us.
This is a Balsam, and it's from Rod Marcus from Rarity Cellar, Adam Seeger, who formerly created Hum, and Boyd and Blair Vodka in Pennsylvania.
I love Hum.
Is there a distributor in New York for this?
I'm not sure. I mean, it's very, very new. I don't think it's quite out yet, but I mean, I know.
We'll put a link up for it with the show.
Awesome.
I want it.
Yeah. Take it.
No.
Thanks, guys. Happy Sunday.
Thanks.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archive programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions anytime at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a 501c3 nonprofit. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.